There's the recording.
There it is.
We're gripping and ripping.
We are today.
Speaking of that, Carp and I were just talking about golf a little bit there. So yeah. We're all smiles, which is exactly what I needed this morning. It's a rainy, gloomy morning. Drove in, freaking so much rain. And then, of course, I had a car right on me. I'm going like 7 miles over the minimum. Right, and the guy's right on me, and the wiper blades are like at max capacity, and I'm like, "What are you doing?" It's just like, "Dang!" Of course, Tennessee license plate. I'm like,
and for those of you listening in other states, I mean, you got to experience some rain driving up here in Oregon because it'll come down so much that your wipers can't even keep up with it.
Totally, and to transition with rainy days. The subject of today's episode is going to be contingent offers.
Yeah.
So this is big, guys. You know, Carp and I are always trying to really come up with new subjects that are very relevant for today's market. And this is something that's coming up a lot. It did not come up 2020, 2021, half of 2022, but almost the last 2 years, a lot of individuals cannot offer on homes without selling their current residents, and that's because that's where all their liquidity is. They have equity in their home. They need that for the down payment. They also cannot qualify for two mortgages, which when interest rates were three or below, people could because the payments were so low.
Yeah, good point.
So I'm kind of defining prematurely there what a contingent offer is, but we're going to go through, hey, what are the nuts and bolts of it? What are your options? And then how is that playing a role in today's market?
Absolutely. And you're getting that information from where?
Here's our intro. Of course, I'm your host, Addy Ned, and I got my main man, Casey Carpenter.
Yeah, buddy.
And you are either watching or listening to MLO, bringing in the heat as always. So let's recap that nuts and bolts of the contingent offer.
Yeah.
I think I kind of explained it there. You got to sell to buy because your money's in the current home, right? Now there's different stages in that I think we should maybe touch upon.
Yeah.
It used to not even be like agents were telling, you remember this, agents are like, I'm not even going to show you home if you're contingent. Because when there were 10, 15, 20 plus offers, the sellers wouldn't even think about it. They want their money now. JG Wentworth style, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were just getting a lot of offers that didn't have a contingency, meaning that potential buyer had a home that they needed to sell in order to close on the new buy, right?
Right. But now they're being accepted and considered at least.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, biggest part is sellers are not getting flooded with offers, you know, yet. And some of these homes are sitting longer on the market, 60, 90, 100 days. So an offer that's a good offer, and maybe the asking price that they're looking for and stuff, just, you know, because that client does have a home to sell, they're more engaged to accepting that offer.
And entertaining it.
A lot of these times, agents, I think, are doing a good job of being proactive with that buyer that they have, of actually getting that home and having that conversation of, like, we need to get your home ready to list. We actually need to kind of get it pretty close. Or, like, if you're really on top of the ball, you might already have it listed on the market right now.
And I want to dive into that.
Yeah.
I want to, because I think there's a lot of buyers right now that want to go look at homes, but they don't want to do the energy up front to get their home
biggest
prepared
reason.
To list.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you guys, that isn't a good approach. If you want to buy and be contingent, there's a couple of basics I really want to advise you on. Yeah. Number one, work with a really good listing agent. And when I say really good, really honest. Honest about recent comparable homes. I just had a conversation with a client last night, and they were telling me they're relocating from Florida, right? Out here to the Pacific Northwest. And Heather Listy, my bestie, we're like, well, what did the agent say? Because they're asking us what to do. And they're like, well, she showed us all these comps, but they were from a year ago, 2 years ago. Unfortunately, guys, it's a tricky situation when you're chatting with listing agents because they want you to hire them. So they're going to demonstrate the highest value of your current home that you're going to sell to make you feel good. Not everyone's like that, but really look at the last 2, 4, 6 months for your property type. And don't look at a brand new construction if you've got a 30-year-old home. Don't look at a 2,700 square foot home value on comparables when you have a 17. Really look at apples to apples and have an honest expectation of what you need to list it for and reference how long that's taking. I kind of...
No, it's a great point, too, it's because really big. You are seeing a lot of clients right now that want to buy, but they don't want to sell their home and buy at the same time. They don't want to go through that energy. They've probably been living there for 5, 10, 15 years. Stuff accumulates when you own a home, right? And it's like, oh, my gosh, I got to move my stuff out. I got to do a little drywall, you know, repair, you know, paint or whatever. Yeah. Like, there's some stuff that they want to do. You know, but at the same time, I mean, if your money's tied into that home, I mean, it's tied into that home. The only way to access that money would to be to sell it, you know, as one option. We'll explain a couple other ones. But
totally. And like right now, with it being end of February, it might not be the most ideal time to list your home for max value, depending on your area, your home type, all that stuff. But have that consult early and get that punch list done. I want to get back to our agenda, but a real quick important thing that I'm hearing a lot right now is property conditions for homeowners insurance. So with all the natural disasters and the volatile weather throughout the nation, insurance companies are getting slammed with claims, and the cost for insurance is increasing at a rapid rate.
Yes, it is.
Now, there's a lot of homes right now, like even our boy Tyler Ross, Luke, all of our insurance guys that we work with, they're explaining to us, look, we can't even insure a lot of homes of which do not have an adequate roof condition. So let's define good adequate. Point. Right now, the insurance companies are roughly saying 10 years. So if you have a home, even if you have a perfect roof with no problem that's 10 years old, there's a small percentage chance you won't be able to insure your home if somebody buys it. I mean, insure the home. I'm saying that wrong. The home would be uninsurable for the new owners. That's the way to say it. So what happens is you accept an offer as the seller, and then the buyer comes back during the inspection period and says, look, I can't even insure this home. You need to fix the roof. Not my problem. You've lived in it. Roofs aren't cheap, folks.
No, they're not.
$10,000, $15,000, $20,000+, guys. And then you do get a rush fee rolling. Even more expensive. So it goes back to the point that Carp and I are like, get that punch list with your good listing agent and start mentally preparing for the financial upfront costs, not only the physical and the schedule and the inconvenience, to address those issues. Because if you address them upfront, and I'm going to tie this together, if you address them upfront, you're going to save more money because you're not in a pinch, you're going to be less frustrated, and you're not going to be blindsided in a negotiation process. Always do it up front and put it together. Now, going back to the I'm in the Tesla with the buyer's agent, I haven't even listed my home, even though I have to sell it to buy, and I'm window licking, I call that.
Yep.
I'm window licking, I'm looking, I'm dreaming, which is good, great, grand.
Yeah.
But if you start with that, you're in compromising positions on every single negotiation stage, which only decreases your profit line and increases your cost. You're asking for a favor on the sellers because you haven't even listed your home.
Yep.
You're going to pay more than what it's worth to get that convenience. Then you're going to list blindsided, not prepared. You're vulnerable to a really rough inspection period of negotiations. Lastly, you're likely not going to say no to the buyer's counteroffers in negotiations because why? You're contingent and you have to close.
You need it to sell.
You've got deposits. You got all this stuff. And I explain this doing, you know, I'm on my fifth year of my YouTube channels and specializing in relocating people. Yep. This is my jam, folks. And things that I've noticed is the people that try to squeeze the timeline and they're so rigid on it has to happen here because I start this job and this and this and this and this. The profit margin just totally depletes and the cost goes up. It's a huge convenience factor that can really hit someone's best asset. Sorry, that was a rip.
No, I mean, it's such a good point because people don't even consider that. Like, you can do your upfront due diligence. You can meet with an agent. You can get a CMA done, comparative market analysis, kind of know what your home would sell at and have them kind of give you some pointers because maybe there's things you don't know on the home, like the roof, or maybe just some touch-up items that need to be done to make this home look the best for it to list at the best price, you know? There's no need to wait until you're now house hunting for your new home to be prepared to sell your departing home. And ideally, like all the reasons Addie just mentioned, you know, better chances of getting an offer accepted or accepting, you know, an offer or putting an offer in at a higher price for the home, right? Mm-hmm. Because you need to sell, like all that stuff is going to add more to your plate. It is going to make it more stressful for you because you are going to be doing two transactions. You're going to be buying and you're going to be selling. So break that down into some chewable, you know, parts of like, hey, let's get ready to sell early. We know everything. We're prepared for that. You know, maybe you have it on the market when you're shopping, maybe you don't, but at least you were prepared.
Right.
And then now you're going into it. Not all is just one plate of food. You've broken it down into a couple, you know, different dishes, right?
Totally. And I know we're cruising on the freeway here, but to just pull over for the rest stop, I want to give like four or five little quick tips homeowners can do to homeowners can do to prepare their home without these huge, like the roof's intimidating and these
roof's very intimidating.
You're gonna get this stuff and say you don't even want to meet with the listing agent. Hey, spring cleaning's right around the corner. I just rifled off a few things you can do to really stay ahead of the game and maintain the value of your home. Number one, at least out in rainier areas like where we're at in the Pacific Northwest, moss treatment. So you'll see moss growing up. I got it on the sidewalks, different areas. Pressure wash that off, guys. Pressure wash that off if you can. You want to stop it. You'll see it on the roofs. Now, it's a pretty low cost to get that treated. Most of the time when you see the sprinkling of the stuff on the roof, that treats it and the rain, it soaks in and the rain washes it and removes that moss. Guys, do that. Take care of the gutters. This is all stuff you can do with a Home Depot run or ordering a few things at Amazon. Now, if you don't want to get on your roof, which we have a super steep pitch, I don't like getting on the roof. I don't even have a ladder that goes high enough. And I have to write a check for someone to physically go up there and do that stuff. But if you don't have one, be safe, safety first. Do that, guys. 10, 15 bucks. Yep. Spray that stuff on there. Sprinkle it on there. Be ahead of the game. It could save you thousands down the road.
Yeah.
So I did the pressure washing, the roof moss. I'm going to say carpet and flooring maintenance. Yeah. Like shampoo the carpets, guys. Yeah. Like it ain't cheap to replace floors. And we see buyers in a leveraged position just hounding these people. Or one little stain. Oh, God, I'll rip up the whole thing.
Right.
Keep those looking crispy clean if you can. The next one, a little deeper dive, do attic and basement checks, guys. It sucks. I hate getting up in my attic. It's so tiny. It's through our main bedroom closet. Yeah. And like, I have to bring, like, we don't have one of those pull down things. So I have to bring the ladder up.
A lot of new constructions like that. It's right there in that master closet.
It's annoying. And getting down under the attic sucks too. It's under the crawl space of the stairs, but get under there and check it out. You want to look for moisture, you want to look for any seals that are broken, make sure it looks all good and snuff. Throw a couple bug bombs down under there if you're gone for a weekend and get that out of there. I see that so much, like buyers negotiating for pest control, moisture intrusion. You want to know if something's going on. Those are easy things you can do. Lastly, your system servicing. Guys, some of the biggest costly things we see buyer and sellers is addressing systems. So your HVAC, your water cooler, these things. So yes, you can pay someone to come in and service and tune up. And yeah, it's a tough check to write, guys. A few hundred dollars, it ain't getting any cheaper. But paying $200-$400 is way better than $4,000-$8,000 down the road. And it's going to work more efficient. Utility costs are going up. You want these things working great. Now, I would suggest there are certain things, don't get taken advantage by these servicers. A couple years ago, I had one and the guy was like, that'll be $575. My jaw dropped to the floor. I was like, what the hell did you do? And I actually looked at the punch list. A majority of the work, and I talked to my neighbor, call him Ranger Rick.
Yeah, nice.
He's super handy. But Ranger we broke Rick. Down like 90% of these things. We could order the parts and do it ourselves. So we work together now on these things. Like, he ordered us a couple of the filters that we got charged 3 times market rate plus labor, and got up there and did it herself, replaced the filter, saved a few $100s, guys. Like,
yeah,
use YouTube. Don't break your stuff. And not everyone's even confident with do. I'm not, but I figured it out. If I can go in and replace a filter on my HVAC and tune up a few things on my own to save $400, I'm doing it.
Yep.
So that is my that was a power through, but those are four or five really good tips.
Yeah, because it'll come up. I mean, during that person that's going to be buying your home, they're going to most likely do a home inspection. They're going to check all that stuff. You know,
they're going to ream you.
Absolutely.
Because the buyer agent, once again, it goes back. The buyer's agent is convinced the potential buyer, the person that you're getting the offer from, that, hey, we're going to be in a leveraged position. It's a buyer's market, which is true. And trust me, getting an accepted offer is just starting point one on the Monopoly board. And we got to go all the way around Four Corners to Boardwalk. And it's going to be a tiresome road, like, if you don't have your stuff up to snuff.
Yeah. And even when we sold our house, you know, in the heyday, you know, right there coming off of 2021 and stuff like that, mm-hmm. like,
nothing.
We got over asking price. It was great. You know, everything was teed up, but that's just the beginning. They go through the home process, and it was a 73 ranch. And we'd done pretty well job, you know, good job of keeping that place up to date. But we still get a laundry list on that inspection report. You know, obviously we didn't do everything, but there was still some stuff that we had to do.
You know,
it was just part of it. We had a sewer line that just had tree root growing into it, you know, from the front. You never see that. And you know, how to get that section replaced. Part of the roof, you know, we needed to actually replace too. So you never know. I mean, being proactive, you know, and I'd say even to add to Addy's, you know, proactive list up there is, you know, if there's some touch up paint that needs to be done, go ahead and touch that up a little bit, you know. I mean,
totally.
There's no big deal with that. You can, you know, paint some of the window trim, base trim that maybe has been scuffed up. You've had that dog sitting there scratching out the front door or whatever. You know, go ahead and put a little paint on that.
I always find it like super productive to just at least have that list. And if it's just one thing a week, I'm going to do. Because all that adds up. You know, a couple months go by, you've gotten almost a dozen things done. And it's nice. I get back to the servicing thing really quick. Save the receipts and invoices if you do that stuff, or if you buy a new filter or you do the tune-up. Save those receipts, put them in your little home file, your taxes file, you know, the one folder in the cabinet that you pull out once a year. Put them in there so you can demonstrate when you sell, hey, we have these things done.
Yeah.
It's really helpful, because you might tell the buyers, hey, we did that. We don't care.
Yeah.
If you don't have proof of service, it's kind of like with your car. Like, I'm the guy that saves like every single receipt for the oil and the maintenance. And they're just, that's what my glove box is.
Yeah.
It's just that freaking time capsule of maintenance work. It's good to have that stuff. But let's go back.
Well, it helps with the sell.
It helps.
Whether, you know, when you're selling a house, a vehicle, whatever, like when you're handing that potential buyer, like here's the properties folder, right?
Right.
And like, here's every receipt, you know, and you demonstrate that you've tried to be a good homeowner or good car owner.
Yeah.
You know, like I sold my, you know, 72 Nova, you know, a couple of years ago or whatever it was. And, you know, when I was giving the guy kind of the rundown of the car, like he could tell I love this car, I put a lot of work into it and stuff.
Totally.
And we just didn't have the space and stuff for it. And the guy got a great deal and a ton of car parts and all this stuff, you know, just like a home. But then I handed him the folder at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I had all those receipts from all the years, new parts bought, what I had for services done, everything. So he was like, wow, like this is
impressive.
Yeah. And same thing goes for when you're selling your house, you know. It just shows that you've tried to do your best. You've stayed up on maintenance as best as you could, and you got the proof to show it.
Yeah, it's very good. Very good. So hopefully that little rest stop beneficial
nuggets there.
But going back, let's go back to the actual options you might have on being contingent or having to sell or not. Just to go back, this used to not be an issue when payments were so low and interest rates were so low. So let's just say you make $10,000 a month gross income. You have no other debt, right? typically the easy math is you can get approved up to $5,000 mortgage because you have no other monthly payments, right? So if your current residence is $3,000 a month, you could go non-contingent if you have the money and the new monthly payment stays at $2,000 or less. That scenario is really hard to make work unless you're making super big money, $250,000, $500,000 a year. Us average folks, you can't make those numbers work. Other options to explore if you don't want to sell right away. You can look at executing a home equity line of credit or a HELOAN, which are most common now over HELOCs, and get that cash up front. So you would be paying monthly payments on that, which accounts to your buying power, but you'd have liquidity instantly. So that, if that situation is appealing to you, I want you guys to reach out to us. Carp and I have some really good broker options to that. And there's some specific details that I could rant for 20 minutes about, but if that's what you're thinking, please call us, reach out. Our details are in the show notes because there's a lot of little things to know about that. And you don't want to just assume, oh, that's what I'm going to do. Let 6 months go by and it doesn't work out for you. So hit us up on that. Another route to go, which is very common with the relocating families, say they don't want to sell that home at 2.5% interest rate. Like, this is great. My payment's only $2,000.
Yeah.
They elect to rent it out.
Yep. Keep the home.
Keep the home. So they find the liquidity for the down payment on the new home, whether it's through a home equity loan, line of credit, maybe tapping into savings, retirement, maybe a gift from family, whatever it might be.
Yep.
They've found the liquidity, but they don't want to sell that home because the terms are amazing on it. Here's the route that you have to go. It's called leasing out your house or renting it out. And what's required there is a 12-month lease agreement with proof of 1 month's deposit of rent and a security deposit. And all that has to be verified through copies of the checks, updated bank statements. But in return, you actually get 75% of the agreed upon lease amount. Now, what that means by you get it back is, say that net value is $2,000, like whatever, or say you rent it out for $4,000, right? You get $3,000 and say your payment's $3,200. So that liability now gets reduced from $3,200 down to a net $200, yep, completely opening up your buying power. So you shift from, hey, I can't afford it from a debt to income standpoint to now I can with this route. The kicker is it can't be inflated. So you can't just rent it out for $10,000 and now you have a positive net of $7,000. It caps at the total overhead of your monthly all-inclusive payment. But going that lease is super, super, super popular.
A way to keep your home, and especially for those clients that had lower, you know, took advantage of the lower interest rates and got really low mortgage payments. And I mean, at the end of the day, if you can keep a home as you start to own multiple homes, it's how you can create long-term net wealth too, right?
Yeah,
I mean, those two options are great because we are just seeing a lot of clients that just, they don't want to sell right away. They want to buy first. And when you have that property, majority of the time, like Addy was just mentioning, like it's tough to cover both mortgage payments. A lot of times a client can't qualify with their departing mortgage and the new mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't have the income there. So those are great ways to get around that. You know, you also too, I've seen clients now consider maybe bringing on a non-occupying co-borrower or co-signer, mm-hmm, you know, to help them bring some income in that they don't have to maybe cover both mortgages. You know, and you got a couple other options out there too, because it is just a thing where I think clients right now would rather be trying to, if I'm putting myself in their shoes, you know, try to buy that home now so then they can maybe get their stuff out of that home, move it in there, and then kind of, you know, take a little bit of extra time to really get that house to the best condition to sell it.
Yeah.
You know, but it takes some work, you know. I mean, you have to find a way to buy that property going non-contingent with the means that you have. So,
and to tie into that, if you do have to go contingent, and it's going back to the like, don't offer if you're not even on market. So there's a couple of like key milestones, like you're either on market and you haven't gotten into contract yet, right? Or you're into contract and then there's different levels. Ideally, you're offering not only when you have an accepted offer, you're through that inspection period. That's really, really big. Typically, it's 5 to 10 business days after the accepted offer. Because what that allows you to do is really leverage your offer on the buy side. You can be like, look, this thing's 3 weeks from closing. That's a way better spot versus, hey, we're just on market. And they're kind of, if they accept it, they might make you bumpable, meaning they could offer another, they could accept another offer. The timeline gets really juicy there.
Yeah.
So get it on market, get an accepted offer, get through your contingencies or the inspection period, and then put in offers. That's really key, guys. Now, some people might be like, hey, Addy, well, where am I going to go if I'm going to close and I don't? The kicker on these guys is work with your listing agent to communicate that you would like something called rent back. So what rent back is, it'll, even though you've sold the home on paper, which typically takes about 30 days, you could negotiate post-closing occupancy as a renter of the home that you just sold. So I've seen it go anywhere from 1 week up to 2 months. So you financially have the money because you've closed, and now you're just staying in there as a convenience. You're technically a renter, but that's giving you more of a runway to go be selective, go negotiate without urgency and pressure. Once again, guys, it comes down to having time. Time is one of the biggest assets that you can have in this process. The more flexible, the more profit, the cheaper the cost.
Yeah, that's a great point. So I, you know, coming back to it, you know, there's some other options too. We talk about clients, talk to clients about it. It's, you know, are there any type of programs and stuff like that that allow you to go non-contingent?
Yeah,
right.
Thank you.
And there is, right. There's a couple of them out there. You know, one of the big ones that I'm always talking to clients about, I think it's a great program. It's a great program for specific clients in this situation. And as long as that, you know, is financially feasible for them. But we actually have a cash buyer program. We call it NAF cash, where we will purchase that home up front for the buyer cash, hold the property, and allow them time to sell their departing. There's some other variables in there like rent and, you know, buyback costs and stuff like that that you want to be aware of, which we break down for clients. But it is a loan option that allows you to buy now and sell afterwards. Something else like that we've seen in years past, which has been around for a while, you might hear agents and other lenders talk about it, would be a bridge loan. This is a loan to bridge the gap while you buy your new home and are selling your departing home. So those are good options to look at. Just with that, I mean, everything's a little bit different. You want to check that stuff out because some of those require larger down payments than maybe you have right now. You know, some of those are 25% down loans and stuff like that, right? Especially on the bridge products. One thing to check that I'm running into a lot right now with clients is, and we've seen this kind of since COVID, you know,
sure. People
wanting to get out of the cities, suburb areas and get more rural properties. Those sometimes just don't work well for these unique one-off programs. You know, they're made for more of your suburban or city settings, metro areas. So like, you know, you want to sell your house that's in the neighborhood, but now you want to move out to a complete rural area where you don't got a lot of neighbors, you do need to check these programs and kind of make sure that works for you.
Gotcha.
Because they are unique, you know, and it's like, hey, they just don't necessarily want to take on that risk because a lender will look at it from, hey, if you don't sell your home, which hopefully, you know, that doesn't happen. But in reality, we've seen clients not be able to sell their departing.
Right.
That lender may be stuck with that home then and may need to sell that on their own. And that's a risk that they're going to look at. Is it easier to maybe sell a house in a neighborhood surrounded by other comparables and stuff at a, you know, decent price range? Or is it harder to sell something that's 30, 40 miles away from anything and has no neighbors and stuff? Most likely that home takes longer to sell. So there is that just property kind of features of it you want to check if you're kind of looking into these non-contingent programs. But
that's good. I hadn't even crossed that scenario. Most of the time, and just I'm glad that you brought up let's bucket it alternative financing.
Yeah.
So with this alternative financing, whether it's a bridge loan or our New American Funding cash program, there's other cash programs out there too. guys, it's kind of going back to what Carp and I are preaching. It's a convenience, and all conveniences have a fee. So the fees are often pretty high. Now, one thing to know, this is what scares me about utilizing alternative financing at a high interest rate or convenience fee, is often the meter's running. So imagine like ordering a Lyft or an Uber, right? Because you need a ride to the airport, and it's parked out front of your house and the meter's running. But you're in your kitchen window cleaning sinks, and you can't even get in there, but you're paying for it.
Yeah.
You're paying for that convenience. It's same with these programs. The meter is running until you can sell, and the variable is you don't know the timeline. Now, to Carp's point earlier, you might have, you know, a planned urban development, inner city suburbs, everyone wants my home, it's going to be easy peasy, great, right? But if you're stubborn on the price, you're over listing, it has a lot of work, it's not going to go, the demand is low, you could often be paying a lot of money for these conveniences. So these are things that Carp and I break down all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to just like even try to be more positive, like I've had clients that are getting relocated for work, and the company's like, we'll give you $30,000 relocation.
Yeah.
Then they don't care. They're like, this is what I have to be there. They're giving me the money. I'll take some of that relocation bonus I'm getting to pay for these fees and the moving costs. And it's a moot point. But those scrappers, the nickel and dimers, it's really hard to have it both ways, folks. It's really hard.
Yeah. And that's the way to, I mean, really put it. Having a very detailed educational conversation about these programs is really the only way to go about it, because it does need to be a plan. Like, it's not just hop in and see where the river takes us. You know, you really have to have a plan, because, you know, the longer it takes to sell your home, the more it can cost you to buy that new home in a situation, you know, especially on these alternative financing. And you just really have to be honest with yourself as that buyer, because, you know, recently I've had some clients too, where it's just like, they are so firm, like, we do not want to sell our home until after we have bought a home. Okay. And we go through the scenarios.
Yeah.
And maybe there's just a couple options. Maybe there's no additional money that they can get to cover both mortgages, no co-signer. And you're really down to maybe looking at an alternative financing, our cash buyer program, which is great, a bridge loan, if that works for you, great. Or just going contingent. And they're looking for another answer out there. But sometimes, guys, like, that is the answer. It's either you make a non-contingent way work, one of the financing options, additional money, yep, co-signer, leasing your house that way, or you go contingent. I mean, some people just are like, well, I'm not going to go contingent. There's sometimes there's no other option for you out there too. You need to look at it. But I do want to say that we are seeing sellers be more open to contingent offers, because they are not getting flooded with offers. So don't let that be a hesitation for you to just throw in the towel. I'm not buying now. Like,
yep.
You know, like, if contingent is kind of the only option for you, give it a shot, because the worst thing that someone's going to say is no.
Yeah. I mean, Kristen and I got a contingent, it was like 2018. We got a contingent offer accepted, and the property which we needed to sell wasn't even on the market yet. It was actually, we said, photos are scheduled in a week, was in the offer.
Yep. Great.
But
honest,
this particular home was sitting for a while. They were open to it. It was good. We ended up not buying the home post inspection. But yeah, it's out there, guys. And I know Carp's way better at being positive than I am. I tend to be like super direct and with the negative. And the passion for me comes out with, I just want all of my clients and my people to know the details. It's not that there isn't a way to do it. I'll always, if you're telling me, hey, Eddie, we got to figure it out, this is what we want to do. But I like breaking down the options for people, letting them choose after they understand the pros and cons of every single. And that's all we're trying to do here. That's how we've always been.
100%. And that's what I think, you know, sets us apart from a lot of people. We're not doing this as just a sell. It's not another sell in the door, out the door, move on to the next. Like, we want you guys to be very educated, to make the right educated decision for you. There might be a couple of choices to be made, but you know what, me and Addy, you know, might work for us or think works for us, might not work for you, you know? So that's why you're going to get those different options. We're going to break it down very detailed, all the pros and cons, and allow you to make that financial decision on your terms and what works for you.
Yep.
But really, I mean, it's just something you're seeing out there. I think going contingent is a possibility right now in this market. As you see homes sit longer, sellers not getting a lot of offers, they're being open to a type of offer like that.
Totally.
I just got one accepted, contingent offer. You know, the clients are being proactive on it. They actually were in the process of listing a home and had an offer coming in. So they were being proactive.
Nice.
And that seller paid for their closing costs. It's a win-win. Non-contingent route, we just explained multiple ways to look at that.
Yeah.
You know, almost five or six different options to go non-contingent.
Mm-hmm.
So really, I think, you know, either option works for you as long as it works for you, right?
Absolutely. I mean, well said. I think we threw a lot out there for people. And once again, like I always say, if this is a situation that you want us to expand upon, or it fits you, or you're putting together a plan for the next 3, 6, 12, 18 months, whatever it might be, we'd love to hear from you. We love the reach outs. We really appreciate all the listeners. Both Casey and I's information's in the show notes. So give us a holler, give us a ring, give us a message, whatever it takes. You know, we got your back here at MLO.
Shoot us a page.
Shoot us a page.
We got a couple pagers on us.
All right, my friends. So thank you so much once again for tuning in. And until next time, we will
catch you later.